Looking for strategies to help you protect your portfolio in these uncertain times? Visit robblack.com. robblack.com, powered by EP Wealth.
Welcome back into Rob Black and Your Money. I'm Rob Black, talking all things financial, money investing, and more. Let's bring in Patrick O'Hare from briefing.com to talk about a market update. He's been part of this broadcast / podcast / radio. I've only wished that I can squeeze you into TV, but you are in Chicago and I am in San Francisco. Patrick, how are you?
Hey, good morning, Rob. I'm hanging in there all right here in Chicago.
Things have changed a little bit in the last couple of weeks on Wall Street. We went from that 5 up months in a row. It feels a little bit more volatile, not like a minefield, just a little bit more wobbly. What are you making of the current market conditions?
Well, there's always uncertainty in the market, right? But there's a little bit of heightened uncertainty these days, obviously, with what's going on in the Middle East. And also what's happening in the treasury market. The market coming into the year, as we've discussed, had a very strong outlook for multiple rate cuts, upwards of 6 from the Federal Reserve before the end of the year. That's now been washed out to about, maybe 2 by the end of the year, but despite that, the market's had an excellent run through it all, because the market sort of recalibrated those rate cut expectations for the right reasons, meaning it was seeing strong economic activity and disinflation. But what we're butting up against here more recently is a concern that the improvement in inflation that people thought they'd keep seeing could stall out. And so that's going to lead to, rates likely being higher for longer, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but the market's a bit on edge as to wondering if these restrictive rates ultimately have some payback in the form of more pronounced economic weakness that will then undercut earnings growth.
When you're talking about pronounced economic weakness, we've got earnings season under the way. We've got a couple of the big center money banks, which are not regional banks in any way, shape, or form. The big center money banks, they seem to have fortresses around themselves. But they start earnings season. Any thoughts on what we've seen from the banks so far?
Well, the banks, they don't give a ton of guidance ever. Certainly not in the traditional, earnings and revenue sense. They talk more in terms of net interest income. And they've been a little bit more, I'd say, modest / guarded in that respect. It seems like the qualitative remarks from the CEOs of these banks point to a economy that's doing okay still. Some signs maybe of perhaps the consumer slowing down. Mm-hmm. We heard that from Bank of America yesterday. But it's not like the consumer is, just falling off the cliff here. It's just that, the pace of spending activity is moderating. I'd hasten to point out that you have an Atlanta Fed GDP now model that's projecting, I think the latest look was 2.9% growth in the first quarter. So that's above potential. And as we saw earlier in the week with the retail sales report for March, plenty of spending activity on goods still happening here. And that's, underpinned by consumers who are gainfully employed for the most part, just based on the objective data, right? With an unemployment rate of, that's close to a 50-year low, you're seeing real income up, which is a good thing to help support spending activity. So I think the idea that the soft landing is still intact, or maybe no landing is still intact, is there. And we have not, seen any unnerving series of economic releases that would say that the lag effect of the Fed's prior rate hikes are kicking in. That could come still, and that's what the market's nervous about. But in the here and now, I think you have a market that's consolidating after a huge run, and also has some ready excuses to do that with what's going on in the Middle East and with the with the interest rate stance changing here again.
Now, well, I'm a Californian, and a large part of my show is California-based, I'd imagine. We have our earnings season kind of coming up in the third week of earnings with Tesla, Microsoft, Alphabet, Meta Platforms, all slated to report, as you reported this morning in your page one. Mm-hmm. They seem to be the companies that have the most cash, that generate the most cash, and that I could say it's almost more predictable than some of the other parts of our economy, although I don't think that's totally right or fair to say, but I think that's the perception. What are you making of the big tech companies? Because the Magnificent Seven has lost at least two members who aren't so magnificent anymore in Tesla and Apple.
Right. Yeah. I was reading today that there's some concerns that maybe Tesla's free cash flow would turn negative again. Okay. That's a story unto itself as far as the demand factor there. But, you know, companies like Microsoft and Alphabet and Meta, doesn't seem to be any real, slowdown in demand for them. And they do have, ample cash and strong balance sheets that, gives them both an offensive and defensive quality, which is why they continue to be, bid, so to speak. There's not really a rush to the exits. Now, of course, they've continued to impress every quarter here for, I can't even remember how long now. And the fear is always that, something's going to happen to upset that strong performance, and then you get a real rush of selling interest. And if that's the case, then of course the broader market would probably have some difficulty digesting that. But I think that given their history of reporting, they still get the benefit of the doubt that they're going to continue to put up some solid numbers that help them stand out above the rest here. But that's, one of the factors is it's always a wait and see type of stance. You've got so much crowding in those names. Everyone now waits on edge to hear if they, are living up to those expectations. And so kind of going to probably chop around here in those names and in the broader market even until we get those reports next week.
Good stuff. I've monopolized your time so far with questions. Anything that you're working on that you kind of want to stretch your legs with and tell us more about?
Yeah, sort of kicking around a bit of the idea here of, looking at bond spreads. Exciting stuff, right? So when you look at kind of where, say, the 10-year note yield is versus where the 10-year German Bund yield is, you've seen a widening spread there, and it kind of comes back into that interest rate differential trade that we often hear about. But with starting to sort of pick up here with the idea that the Fed is not going to cut rates in June, and the ECB will cut rates in June. And so you'll see some kind of intermarket relationship dynamics in play here, I'd say, in coming months where maybe you see a wider spread there perhaps as the and perhaps the euro weakening against the dollar as the ECB moves toward a interest rate cut posture while the Fed stands pat. So just something of working around that is one of those ideas. And then really would probably want to talk more about just sort of the big picture that I posted last week, which I entitled, Shed Some Risk. And that was predicated on a recognition, that the equity risk premium is not that strong right now. And you have a market cap weighted S&P 500 that's trading with a, let's just call it a full valuation. And so so the reward profile for stocks is not as strong as it used to be. And so that's why it's more demanding of these companies when they report their earnings that they not only live up to the expectations, but that their guidance also lives up to expectations, if not exceeds it, ideally. If you don't get that type of dynamic, then we'll have a market that will probably continue to consolidate here.
It's interesting. You and I have been doing this roughly similar amounts of time because we've been on the air for over 20 years together. The 10-year treasury, it wasn't something that was all that sexy, and you kind of laughed at yourself about talking about bonds 20 years ago. But now as I get older, 4.5% on my money feels pretty good. It doesn't, and historically that's below average. There's been higher yields on the 10-year treasury and what you get out of bank and a CD and a money market. What are your thoughts on the 10-year treasury at this point in your career, as you've had 20 plus years to season it?
Sure. I think that's a great point you're making, Rob, is that, we've been blessed in a way with super low rates for an extended period of time, that we've gotten pretty used to them as being, normal. And the fact of the matter is that they really are not normal. So, so a 10-year, running up 4.5%, maybe 5%, it kind of creates some shock value for a whole generation of, investors who cut their teeth over the last 20 years. But obviously, we've seen higher rates in the past, and we've seen the economy do fine with higher rates in the past as well. And so there's an adjustment factor, I think, that's kind of kicking in here. It's nice to have some actual yield there for savers that wasn't there. And that's, one of the positives coming out of this whole inflation situation that we've been dealing with.
Thanks very much. It's Patrick O'Hara. You can read his content, page one in the big picture, at briefing.com. Briefing.com has so much more beyond that, including market views, swing traders, story stocks, IPOs, the bond column, Fed brief. I start my day with his page one. I end my day by reading through all the in plays, which is kind of like the minute by minute what's happening on Wall Street. And then I end my week with Patrick as well on the big picture. Briefing.com is a reliable source of international and domestic news that you can use. Find it online at briefing.com. That's briefing.com. I'm Rob Black.
This interview featured on The Rob Black Show is brought to you by EP Wealth. Learn more at robblack.com.
Every now and then, I think it is important to do a story of why we are investing. Not just how to invest, not just how to create wealth, but some of the things that happens that sometimes are even kind of fun to talk about, right? NVIDIA employee, he's mid-level. He's going to retire with $62 million from stock options, while another employee lost it all. Winners and losers. I do a segment on television called Winners and Losers. And I post it every day on my website, robblackshow.com. It's robblackshow.com. Or you can find it on my YouTube channel, Rob Black Show. And subscribe. It's fun to see the numbers go up. I don't make any money from it. So I'm not, there's going to be no advertisements that I believe of. I can't really control YouTube, but I don't think they put ads on it. The wealth that can be gained from helping to propel a successful company, it's pretty stunning. We all know NVIDIA, right? AI play. Different types of CPUs. Intel was dominant and still is dominant on CPUs, the brain of the computer. Now, back in the day, GPUs started to become a thing, graphic processing units. And they're great for video games. They're great for driving simulations. They also happen to be great for increasing the way computing happens on a quicker level to facilitate artificial intelligence fast needs. So NVIDIA has been a stock we've talked about for years on the show. I own shares of NVIDIA, as a disclosure. One mid-level employee, NVIDIA employee, accrued a fortune of $62 million. Pretty cool, huh? As a counterpoint, at least one NVIDIA employee who made $500 million mistake after their green gold slipped through their fingers. You get a little bit of both. So one employee who was not an engineer, so he wasn't that high up, maxed out the employee stock purchase plan for 18 years, also known as an ESPP. The benefit allows employees to use 10-15% of their salary to buy stock at a 15% discount. Pretty good deal. Tale of the mid-level NVIDIA employee who maxed out the employee stock purchase plan for 18 years and kept a firm hold of his green gold ends up with him walking with $62 million. He's said to have left NVIDIA with a sack of shares worth $62 million. It must have been hard to hold those shares without something dipping, sometimes dipping into it, saying, I'm going to pay off some credit cards. I'm going to get some cash. I'm going to buy a boat. I'm going to buy a house. When you're looking at your stock options, or when you're looking at your shares that you've been buying, and they're worth $62 million in your company account, Do you tell anyone? If I didn't have this show, I would never talk about wealth. Never, ever, never, ever. Not everyone who took advantage of the NVIDIA ESPP during the rocket-propelled share valuation gains fared so well. There's also another NVIDIA employee, an engineer, who once was the proud owner of a million NVIDIA shares. Sadly, this employee had to sell up his shares to pay for losses when his broker margined his account with another stock that fell 90%. I'm not a big fan of margin. Margin is a loan that if you have money with a firm like a Charles Schwab, if you have a $100,000, they'll say you can go out and spend another $20,000 to $30,000 of imaginary money. You're like, whoa, that's cool. No, you're getting charged interest on it daily. And if that stock goes down 90%, you have to put up your stocks as basically collateral. So this one guy had, how many was it? A million NVIDIA shares. Keep in mind it was valued recently at 882. So that's almost $1 billion. Like, whoa. Now, I don't know when this margin loan blew up on him. It had to be a long time ago. But having to sell those shares to cover your stockbroker's mistake tells you one of the reasons why I don't like stockbrokers. In general terms, I like financial planners as the type of person to work with. A margin account is where you leverage the value of one or more of your holdings to purchase other stocks or financial assets. The forced sale from the margin account led to a $500 million mistake, according to some. Last year, I read a story about Curtis Priam, the first NVIDIA CFO who cashed out relatively early. If he had held on to his NVIDIA stock, it would be worth over $70 billion. However, he has an estimated $30 million personal fortune. It sounds like pretty good, fulfilling life, right? So even a CFO who knows the company's financials was given stock options. And at one point in time when he decided to change and move on to another company, he cashed out, probably because he couldn't babysit his stocks as well. I get it. But to be worth $70 billion versus $30 million, do you think he made a mistake? I really can't say that, right? He was one of the co-founders of NVIDIA and was the CFO. So he worked alongside Jensen Huang and Chris Malachowski. And they've all grown old together, and some of them are billionaires and some of them are multimillionaires. It all depends on how you hold your stock and what your thoughts are about it. This segment has me thinking of one of the phrases that I use: buy great companies, don't buy great stocks. Well, if you can buy a great stock in a great company, that's great. But buy great companies. Now, I can't be that simple. That's irresponsible of me. You got to look at the financials.
For more information about EP Wealth, visit robblack.com. That's robblack.com.
Real estate versus stock market. Which one's the winner? Interesting. The New York Times did a study over a 40-year period that the stock market created four times greater returns than the real estate market in cities like Chicago, New York, and LA. The stock market, if you started with the same amount of money that you put into your home and continue to put money that you're putting into your home, your mortgage per se, and when you factor in interest on the mortgage and no interest on your stock market investments, you also have to factor in repairs. The stock market crushes the returns of the housing market. Historically, stocks return about 10%. Historically, real estate returns about 4 to 6%. Now, on top of that, I think there's something that everyone should be aware of called the hidden cost of home ownership. Rise in insurance premiums, property taxes, maintenance costs, rising utility costs. I'm shocked at how much electricity costs now from where it cost 10, 20, 30 years ago, which again is the same period of time for this conversation, right? Now, you can pay off your home, but you're still always going to have costs or bills that come along with home ownership. Insurance costs have risen 63% in the last 2 years, if you're even able to get insurance. Some states like California are seeing insurance policies dropped aggressively. Property taxes, utility costs, homeowners association fees have risen in recent years too. Home affordability is a statistic that has now fallen to its lowest level since the 1980s, as mortgage rates reached a 23-year high and home prices set new records. Borrowing costs have eased somewhat this year, with the average rate for a 30-year home loan down about a percentage point since October. But other prices related to home ownership show no signs of subsiding, and they show signs of continuing to go higher. Property taxes and home maintenance costs are climbing. Mortgage costs include property taxes, maintenance, utilities, insurance make up more than half the homeowner's overall costs. Home insurance premiums are soaring. Rates are up more than 10% on average in 19 states in 2023. After a series of big payouts related to floods, storms, wildfires, and other natural disasters. We all know about the consumer prices that the Federal Reserve is paying attention to, so they can hopefully lower interest rates to give us a little relief in the financing of our debt. But the stronger than expected inflation data could cause the Federal Reserve to hold rates at their current level, even though they don't control wildfires and floods, which is interesting, and that would stop mortgage rates from declining anytime soon. Nearly one in five homeowners say they can't afford a $500 emergency repair without going into credit card debt. 42% said they've skipped home repairs or maintenance because of the costs. Have you ever walked in someone's home and it's just a total pigsty? It's probably because there's not a lot of extra cash laying around after they've afforded that home. Almost 10% of homeowners were not confident they could afford their home insurance premiums at their next renewal. One in 10 homeowners are thinking, I may not be able to afford insurance. There was one man whose Social Security income was $1,050 a month. He died. I was reading research on him. The property tax on his home was about $5,400 a year, and his insurance cost more than doubled between 2020 and 2023 to almost $7,000. And his Social Security was $1,050 a month. So what's that tell you? His Social Security was barely covering his home insurance in retirement, and it wasn't that nice of a home. These are costs that are not necessarily on the radar because people look at the home price. Maybe they look at the mortgage rate second kind of thing. And then when do they start looking at property taxes? When do they start looking at repairs? Mortgage rates in the 1970s were egregiously high. In 1981, I think at the peak of mortgage rates, they topped 18%. 18% for a mortgage. Then by the late 80s, they dipped down to about 10%. And that's when home ownership started getting a little bit more attractive. And during the early years of the pandemics, people refinanced to rates that were below 3%. I've got a mortgage right now for 2.62%. It's stunning. I don't see myself ever prepaying that. Home maintenance fees have risen. It cost an average of $6,633 a year to maintain a home in the fourth quarter of 2023. That's up 8.3% from a year earlier. And that's things like gutter cleaning, lawn care, roof repair, maintenance. The pace of prices increases has slowed, but demand for home maintenance services continues to outpace the supply. Almost half of owner-occupied homes were built before 1980, and homes before 1980 need maintenance as they age. Just a lot of things to think about, right? Property taxes, which are rising due to the effect of inflation on local government budgets. are pushing homeowners to dig deeper into their bank accounts. The average property tax for U.S. family homes is $4,062. That's up 4% from the previous year. In Charlotte, North Carolina, a city that's growing quickly, the average property tax rose 31% from 2022 to 2023. In Indianapolis, it was up 19% in 1 year. Homeowners with mortgages, which is about 60% of all owners, are required to purchase property insurance.
30.
Catastrophic weather events, rising labor and material costs, and uncertainty about future losses are all pushing home insurance prices higher. The average annual home insurance cost rose 20% between 2021 and 2022 to $2,377. Wow. It's expected to go up another 6% this year.
10.
Are homes the best investment you made? Or are they the biggest liability you ever take on? Find me online at robblackshow.com.
Brought to you by EP Wealth. This is the Rob Black Show.
Some headlines from today. Tesla has asked shareholders to vote again on Musk's $56 billion payout. Pretty interesting, right? A Delaware state judge said it was too excessive. Now that the stock has had a bad start of the year, a really bad start of the year, will shareholders say, yeah, it's cool, pay yourself $56 billion? Is he that important to the company? When he's spending time at Twitter/X? When the demand for EVs are subsiding and there's a lot of publicity tied towards his tweets? I don't know. I'm one of those people who won't own Tesla shares because I find him to be too much of I don't think he's a genius. I know that sounds weird to say, but he didn't start Tesla. He came in there and took it over. SpaceX is pretty genius-like, but that too was something that he took over. The Boring Company seems to be going nowhere fast. The full self-driving isn't full self-driving. The robo-taxis that he promised 8 years ago still aren't here. Is he worth $56 billion, or is this a good PR move by a guy who's over-promises and under-delivers? Elsewhere in the headline news, Amazon Cloud Unit kills snowmobile data transfer truck 8 years after driving an 18-wheeler on stage. Interesting, right? They drove an 18-wheeler onto a Las Vegas conference stage. Amazon Web Services designed the semi to help customers move large amounts of data to the cloud. So they're trying to show you what large amounts of data means. It said the company would be using the truck to help customers speedily transfer data. Less than 8 years later, the Simi is out of commission. So the Snow family of products now directs users to other data transport services, including Snowball Edge, 50-pound suitcase-sized device that can be equipped with fast solid-state drives and a smaller snow cone. Sometimes we think we see the future, and it just never happens. I threw that down there. It is kind of interesting to look at the history of companies. There was once a company called Exodus Communications in the early 2000s that basically was cloud computing before there was cloud computing. It offered servers online and internet online to companies that wanted to lease space. That company went bankrupt. It was run by a former IBM executive, Alan Hancock. It was before its time. I think that's a weird thing to say. It had the right idea. It just couldn't pull it off. Eli Lilly is a big winner today. It turns out that Zepbound, their weight loss drug, shows potential to treat patients with obstructive sleep apnea, also known as OSA. Shares of ResMed, which makes devices to treat sleep-related breathing disorders, tumbled 4%, while Eli Lilly went up 2%. There's about 70 million Americans who suffer from sleep apnea, which can lead to hypertension, strokes, and heart attacks. So if your husband is a snores really loud, doesn't breathe for a couple seconds, he may want to get on the Zepbound. United Airlines, a big winner after the airline carrier reported an adjusted loss of 15 cents a share on the quarter. That was 57 cents loss was expected. Quarterly revenue also beat expectations, so we are continuing to travel. ASM Lithography, also known as ASML, Shares are down 5% after the Dutch semiconductor company posted revenue and new bookings that came in below expectations. That's an interesting one. And that instantly has me thinking about Taiwan Semi. ASM lithography helps make, they make the machines that make semiconductors. I call them ovens. And it's supposed to be doing better right now, semiconductor equipment. So when ASM lithography, who once was the biggest, I think they still are. When they slip, does it tell you something? Ferrari. Yes, you get own shares in Ferrari. The stock is up 2%. They reiterated an outperform rating on the stock, Bernstein Research did. So the Italian luxury sports car maker is beginning to master the electrification challenge. The analyst has a $512 price target. That's 24% upside from where it is today. Those are some stocks that are in the news. I don't know. This one feels kind of odd to me. Capri Holdings. It was reported that the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, was getting ready to block the company's $8.5 billion takeover of Tapestry, the parent company of Coach and Kate Spade. I haven't read enough up on this, but it's a New York Times deal book article, which is usually pretty well written. But I can't imagine why the FTC is going to block high-end purses from being consolidated. I don't know. Sometimes I don't see the writing on the wall either. And that's okay. Because it's going to be all right. Super yacht sales are plunging as wait times rise. Russian oligarchs are dropping out of the market. Sales of vessels over 200 meters or roughly 650 feet fell 40%. 40%. Ooh. The Olympic fire lit the torch yesterday. I guess that's how you would say that. Or the Olympic torch is on fire. NBC's billion-dollar ad extravaganza. The Olympics are going to begin in 100 days. Here are some headlines coming out. Kelly Clarkson, Peyton Manning, and Mike Tirico are going to host, or co-host, I guess you would say. That seems weird to me. Again, I don't know. Was I looking for news figures? I guess not. Peyton and Eli have done well for themselves. Kelly Clarkson is kind of the Oprah of daytime now. Caitlin Clark, this Summer Olympics, is under consideration for the Team USA. Now, that's like a no-brainer, right? Brands like Nike, LVMH, and Fanatics could earn $100 million-plus through sales of licensed products. Nike got into a little bit of trouble as they showed some samples of uniforms that appeared to be very high-cut in the bikini area for women, and they were accused of being sexist. Paris cybersecurity officials expect to thwart at least 3.6 billion attempts to hack into the game's digital infrastructure. All that and much, much more telling you why we need plays like Palo Alto Networks going forward in the world of cybersecurity. Find me online at robblackshow.com. Big event coming up May 9th in Palo Alto at the Elks Lodge. Sign up at robblackshow.com.
Visit the Rob Black Show online at robblackshow.com. Listen to archived podcasts, market updates, and information from EP Wealth Certified Financial Planners online at robblackshow.com.